where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 trying to increase the power.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. I am your host, Vic Sage, and for this show, we will be discussing 1989's classic arcade hack and slash, Golden Axe. Before we jump into the specifics for Golden Axe, I would like to point out that a little later in the podcast, I will be joined by my good friend and fellow co-worker at the Arcadia Retrocade, Andy Pickle. We received a great email last week from a fan asking, what do we do when a machine on the floor goes down? The answer to that, of course, depends on the severity of the problem. If it's something like we notice or a player brings to our attention that, say, Dig Dug's joystick is acting odd, Shay, Andy, or myself can usually just open up the machine's coin door, reach up and unlock the latches holding the controls in place, and take a look. It might be something as simple as a wire has become loose from a directional switch, and we can just reattach it. Though, at times, it's a little more complicated, and requires a quick bit of soldering. In that case, Shay or our two techs need to work on it. Because, while I might be qualified to hand out drinks and bags of chips, working with a hot soldering iron is a little out of my comfort zone. If the issue with the game is monitor-related, many times you know this is the case if you can hear the attract screen music and the marquee lights are on, but of course the monitor isn't presenting a picture. That is a whole other can of worms, and we have to let our techs, Beau Counts and John Munkus, work on them. For one thing, if some of the monitors aren't properly drained or discharged, and you touch them, you can get quite a nasty shock. Or even a trip to the hospital because the jolt stopped your heart. Thankfully, no trips to the emergency room have been taken by our trained techs, but I know they've definitely been shocked a couple of times nonetheless. I can't wait to get Beau and John on the show so they can tell you a little more about the process. So if we are indeed faced with a monitor or power issue, there's nothing really that Shay, Andy, or myself can do but kind of reenact that scene from Wreck-It Ralph where Mr. Litwack slaps an out-of-order sign on the machine in question. Beau and John naturally have lives of their own and even other employment, so they may not be there every single night to help keep a machine running. But thankfully, our players seem to be very understanding that they are dealing with machines that are sometimes 30-plus years old. Please keep those email questions coming. I look forward to answering them as best I can on this podcast. Golden Axe was released by Sega in 1989 and developed by Makoto Uchida, who also happened to be the designer for 1988's Altered Beast, 1991's Alien Storm for the Sega Genesis, and 1992's Golden Axe, The Revenge of Death Adder. In fact, one of the beasts a player can ride in Golden Axe is an enemy you faced from Altered Beasts. The game tasks the player to choose one of three mighty warriors to control and go forth to defend the land of Uria from the evil Death Adder, who has kidnapped the king and princess, holding them prisoner in their own castle while his band of marauders terrorize the countryside. The available champions the players can pick from are a male barbarian named Axe Battler, who is seeking to slay Death Adder with his massive two-handed broadsword because the evil Adder murdered his mother. There is also a female Amazon named Tyrus Flair, who plans to get vengeance on Death Adder with her long sword for the slaying of both her parents. Last, but certainly not least, is Gilius Thunderhead, who is a dwarf warrior wielding a mighty battle axe, looking to get revenge on Death Adder like his comrades, though it was the evil dictator's soldiers who happened to kill Thunderhead's twin brother in this case. It's just my personal opinion, of course, friends, but Thunderhead is absolutely the best character to choose when playing Golden Axe. Now, granted, that decision is based solely on the fact he is a dwarf. And for myself, any game that lets you choose a dwarf is an automatic win. Judging from the names of the heroes and villains, you've probably guessed this takes place in a sword and sorcery setting. That is because Mikado, while enjoying action movies, was blown away by John Milius' 1982 epic, Conan the Barbarian. Mikado and his small team of programmers took about a year to create Golden Axe. His overall goal was to, of course, have the game set in a fantasy setting like Conan, with gameplay that was sort of similar to Tecno's Double Dragon. Though in Golden Axe's case, it's a hack and slash where Double Dragon is in the beat-em-up genre. Mikado was also trying to come up with an arcade title that could challenge the overwhelming popularity of NX's Dragon Quest on the home consoles. A title we in North America would come to know as Dragon Warrior when it was released in August of 1989. I think it's safe to say he succeeded. You control your champion with an 8-way joystick, allowing you to move up and down, left and right, as well as diagonally. Three buttons give you control of attacking, jumping, and unleashing your magical attack. The power unleashed by the magical attack is tracked by four slots at the top of the screen, which you fill by collecting magic potions, gathered by kicking the annoying little thieves, or sprites, that try to steal from you in the middle of the night in bonus levels, as well as those you can find in each level. Once you've filled up the four slots with potions, you've reached the maximum level and can call down some righteous power to lay havoc on your enemies. Though, you can certainly cast your spell before you fill up the slots, it just won't be as powerful. Each of the magical attacks for the champions are elemental in nature. Gilius Thunderhead channels lightning attacks. Axe Battler calls down the wrath of the earth, while Tyrus Flare brings the pain with fiery death from on high. You also have the ability to gain fantastical creatures as mounts during your game, helping you bash through the bandits, orcs, skeleton knights, and even Amazons. These mounts are called Bizarrians. Wait until I get to some of the enemy names. And they include a cockatrice, or sometimes it's called chicken leg, depending on what version you're playing, which is one of the enemies from Altered Beast. It possesses a powerful spin attack, smashing into your enemies with a swipe of its tail. Then you have the blue dragon, which can spit fireballs, but not while moving, although it does have a dash attack. And last but not least, in later levels, you gain control of the red dragon, which, like the blue, can spit fireballs, though it can also connect with enemies off the screen, which comes in handy, though it won't be able to shoot another fireball until the first one is off the screen. The red dragon also cannot shoot and move at the same time. So what type of enemies do you face in Golden Axe? Besides Death Adder himself, of course. If you can reach him. You have Heningers. I certainly hope I'm pronouncing these correctly. They are human bandits with maces. There are the Long Moans, which are basically orcs or beastmen, perhaps, with large, heavy wooden clubs. Then we have the Amazons, skeletons, and there are the Bad Brothers, which are kind of like giants with sledgehammers. There are evil knights with a sword and shield, and of course, Death Adder, who wields the legendary Golden Axe. Now I suppose is a good time, before going any further, to discuss the rather complex and baffling scoring system for Golden Axe. During your game, you will not see your score. You have no clue what you are racking up, but at the end of the game, you are given a class rank, from F up to A++++. You will have to be sure to lay low your foes by finishing them off by picking them up and tossing them to the ground, or with a very satisfying kick to the face, especially if you are playing Gilius Thunderhead. The problem with that is you are ending the attack by way of a combo you've set up, one that can be interrupted by another enemy attack, and you're normally attacked by more than one foe at the same time. At the end of the game, your final score is calculated by dividing it by the number of times you've been killed. Though, a small trick was discovered back in the day if you want to boost your ranking. Once you've taken out an enemy, before they fall back to the ground, never to raise up again, you can unleash your magical attack. The game treats it like you are continuously killing that foe, driving up your score, especially when you use it against the level bosses. Though that's probably considered cheating, I'm sure that most players at Arcadia think like I do in the matter of scoring for Golden Axe. Who cares? I'm happy wandering the land of Uria as Gilius Thunderhead, hacking my foes down with a battle axe. Just enjoying playing with another player as we bring justice to Death Adder and his forces. Golden Axe, by the way, wasn't one of the very first titles we had at the arcade. Shay added it to the adventure game lineup 3 or 4 months after the doors first opened, if I remember correctly. It may not be popular as Gauntlet or Gauntlet 2, on account of not offering 4-player playability, but it certainly sees plenty of action throughout the week. Golden Axe was one of the games that I didn't experience at my local Showbiz Pizza. I first encountered the arcade game at our local mall, at a kind of magical place called Land of Oz. I very well might devote an episode to that arcade. It always seemed to be halfway stuck in the late 1970s. You'd have something like Captain America and the Avengers up front, but in the corner you would have the original Space Invaders and coin-op amusements like a puppet show. The very first time I played Golden Axe, though, wasn't at an arcade, but on the Sega Genesis. That wasn't the only home console that the game was ported to. You had versions for the Sega Master System, the Amiga, Atari ST, Amstrad computers, and the Commodore 64, to name a few. But for myself, the Sega Genesis was my first introduction to the game, and I have fond memories of playing it for many hours over at one of my good friend's house on the weekends. Golden Axe is still an incredibly popular title, and you can find it on the Wii's Virtual Console, the Xbox Live Arcade, the PlayStation Network, and in 2014, the Internet Archive released an in-browser playable version. Remember a little earlier when I mentioned that Mikado was a big action movie fan? Well, that applied to some of the sound clips he used from the game from some of his favorite films. For example, when you encounter a villager being beaten up by an enemy, that was taken from 1982's First Blood, from when the villainous Galt, played by Jack Starrett, plummets to his death from a helicopter. How about in the game when you slay General Heartland? That is actually from 1982's Conan the Barbarian, the scene where Thorgrim, played by Sven Ole Thorsen, perishes. How about the sound of a dying Heininger? That comes from Rambo as well, when they discover Mitch, played by David Caruso, who has met Rambo's very sharp knife. There is a video that the Retroist has posted on the site back in 2014. I'll be sure to include the link in the show notes for this episode.
Hello, Mr. Dillinger.
Computer, how many times do I have to tell you? My name is Sage. Vic Sage.
I've got a little challenge for you. A new recruit. It's a tough case, but I want him treated in the usual manner. Train him for the games, let him hope for a while, and blow him away.
What? No! I'm not gonna do that. I'm assuming that Andy Pickle is on the transportation disc. Computer, bring him on in to the Retroist vault.
We have transport.
Whoa, that was weird.
Welcome to the Retroist vault, Andy. People always ask, how do I get from Northwest Arkansas? Now you know.
What was all that crazy computer noise and voices?
Oh, disorientation in transport. It's common. The voice you heard? That's the Retroist Vault computer. The Retroist picked it up from an Incom fire cell like 20 years ago. It's all good. Hey, thanks for joining us on the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast, Andy.
Thanks for having me, Vic. I am super, super pumped to be here.
Andy, would you mind sharing with the listeners the first arcade game you can remember playing?
Yeah, I had to have been four or five, probably closer to five, and it was Ms. Pac-Man. Cocktail version at a little pizza joint in the little town that I grew up in, Daryl's Pizza. And I would go there with my dad and my sister, eat the food, which I couldn't tell you one thing about their pizza, good, bad, or otherwise. But I can vividly remember sitting there at that table with my cup of root beer, playing Ms. Pac-Man. And looking back, that's when it all happened. That's when I fell in love with video games. Arcade games, whatever you want to call them, and yeah, that was it. That was the first arcade game that I vividly remember.
Oh man, I've got tons and tons of memories of playing a Ms. Pac-Man cocktail game at a local pizza place here called Jim's Razorback Pizza. What was your earliest arcade memory?
The first place that I remember going that had more than one or two games, like, you know, we'd always go to like 7-Elevens or whatever that had a couple of things, but we would make a trip to Tulsa, which was about 45 minutes away from where I lived, and we would go to one of two places. The Tilt, which was in Woodland Hills Mall, and it was like your typical kind of dark, sort of scary arcade. Or we would go to another place called Games People Play, which I think was a chain.
A Games People Play? Oh my goodness! So, Andy, That is the first arcade I visited here in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, I think it was a regional thing. The few states around here had them. I don't think it was a national, a national arcade. But yeah, Games People Play, in my little 8-year-old, 9-year-old head, was amazing. I remember Junior Pac-Man. I remember, all the titles that I still really dig, Berserk and Frenzy and Robotron and all that stuff. They had all these classic games, but yet it was still, this was later in the 80s. This was 88, 89.
Oh, wow. Your Games People Play lasted that long. Mine, goodness, I guess it folded in 1983, maybe 1984?
Yeah, I don't know why ours stayed open for so long, and I really have no idea when they closed down, but I know that it was way late into the 80s, maybe even a couple of years past that. But that, as far as big, packed arcades go, that's the one that totally stands out in my brain.
Andy, how about you tell the listeners how you came to be Shea Mathis's right-hand man?
Yeah, Shea and I met, I don't even know now, 5, 6, 7 years ago, something to that effect. I was working at a coffee shop. He would come in and drink up all my coffee, and we sort of hit it off talking about 80s cartoons and 80s video games and, all that kind of cool culture and stuff like that that was sort of making a resurgence now that retro's cool again and all that stuff. And a couple of years into that, is when the idea, struck him and he started pushing all his plans forward for Arcadia. And I came here for about a year and a half or whatever, and sort of, air quotes, volunteered and did what I could to help the place out. And then about a year and a half ago is when I came on board full time. I quit my, my adult job, and I've been here full time and doing what I do.
So what would you say is your favorite arcade game here at Arcadia?
One game? One favorite game? That's like picking your favorite child, your favorite flavor of ice cream. Can't do it. Won't do it. Some of my favorites here, Tron is like, Tron might be number one, but Berserk, Robotron, as far as the classic games go, I like any 2D fighting game, Street Fighter, Darkstalkers, the X-Men, Children of the Atom, all that type of stuff. The adventure, hack and slash, beat 'em up games like Astyanax and Magic Sword and
Golden Axe?
Yeah, Golden Axe. That would probably make a good podcast sometime. But I those adventure type of games, the hack and slash sort of games, are probably my favorite type of genre that we have here at Arcadia. We've got all those that I talked about. We also have Rastan, and I had no idea this was an arcade game, Willow. We have Willow, and it's awesome. It's a really, really great game. And unlike back in the 80s or 90s, it's not going to cost you $20 to beat Death Adder here. And so I see a lot of our players that come in, and they're able to complete these games in an afternoon or evening or whatever.
So Andy, how do you feel working at a thriving retro arcade in this day and age?
Vic, in all seriousness, it's humbling. It's very, very, it's exciting, it's fun, it's a blast every day here, but it's humbling to see everyone come in, have a good time, and be, pretty much amazed by, the environment that we've created here. And I often say that you cannot have a bad time here. People may come in here and they might have had a bad day at work or whatever, and they are in sort of a grumpy mood or whatever. 2 hours later, those people leave, tell them bye, they're smiling. It's humbling, it's refreshing, it's awesome to see the people my age and a little older that come in, and it's a trip back down memory lane and all that type of stuff. It's so great to see the younger people, the 8-year-olds, the 12, 15, 20, whatever, come in here, and they know this stuff. Because, like I said, retro's cool again and has been cool in mainstream culture. But so they know the stuff. But to see it in person and play it on the actual hardware and everything like that, they get it. It just totally clicks. And, it's a community thing. And at the end of the day, there is a lot of work that goes into this. But seeing everyone so excited and happy, and it makes it all worth it. It's been and is and will be just humbling.
Well said, Andy. Well said.
So, listen, it's Shay's day off today. There's no one working at Arcadia today. How do I get out of the Retroist vault?
Oh, Andy, just walk over there in the corner and step back onto that transportation disc.
Okay, great. Vic, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show.
Andy, it was truly my pleasure, and we'll have you back on the show soon.
Awesome. I cannot wait. Looking forward to it. Hey, the next time that you're in the arcade, I forgot you have to...
We have transport.
What? I have to what? I wonder what Andy was going to say. Computer, can you bring him back?
End of line.
Friends, I think that about wraps it up for this episode. If you have any feedback for the show, or perhaps a suggestion for a game to cover, you can reach me at vicsage@retroist.com. Diary of an Arcade Employee is now available for download on iTunes, so if you have a moment, I would really appreciate it if you could stop by there and give us a positive review. For further information about the Arcadia Retrocade, please make sure to follow them over on their Facebook page. I'll be sure to provide a link on the Retroist post. I, of course, want to give a huge thanks again to The Retroist for not just hosting this podcast, but for allowing me to record in The Retroist Vault. And when you need your daily retro fix, why not visit The Retroist site at www.retroist.com. A huge thank you goes out to Andy Pickle for joining me on this episode. I can't wait to have him back. Listeners, I really hope you'll share your memories of arcades and the game of the week in the comments section of the podcast post. Better yet, I hope you'll be able to share some vintage photos of your favorite arcades. Have a token on me as we listen to a clip for the game I will discuss on the next show. This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye, and we hope to see you next time.